We're now transitioning to our plenary session on the future of work and education. The digital age we find ourselves into today has profound implications for our workforce as well as for those who will prepare students in our schools and colleges to enter that workforce of the future. To kick it off and to kick off the conversation, we will first hear from Rafael Rivera, Associate Partner of McKinsey & Company. Rafael will help us set the context for the challenges and opportunities that our state faces as it relates to education and the changing workforce. Rafael. Thank you so much.
I think this one is not working. Hello, can you hear me now? Yeah. Okay, so I'm not sure if this one is working. Can you hear me like that? Okay, so good morning. I'm very happy to be here today to talk about the future of work in Ohio and all the challenges that we will see over the next few years. So let's start with the presentation that I think is the next page. So as we just heard, we are in a great position in terms of all the jobs that will be created in the state in the next few years. So we have a huge investment from Intel for $20 billion over the next few years and a lot of opportunities to create jobs. The main challenge now is to train the people that will take those jobs, that will occupy those jobs. So what we're gonna see right now is like some numbers that give us some dimension about where the jobs will be created, how many of them we will need, and some ideas on what will be the challenges that we'll see in the future in terms of automation, digital technologies, and other trends that we see in the market. So let's start with the next page to quantify the number of jobs that we believe that we will need. So right now, if we take a look of 2021, how many job positions were available and how many workers we have in the market? So 5.6 million positions were required in the state, and we were only able to complete or fulfill 5.3 million. So there is a gap of 300,000 jobs that were not taken in 2021, mainly because employers couldn't find the talent required. When we take a closer look, most of these numbers, or most of these positions are related to STEM jobs, particularly software development, technology, and some engineering positions. Also, in education, especially elementary education and post-secondary education, there is a huge gap there. And third, some administrative services. Some businesses, accounting, finance services, those positions that could not be completed. And if we take the projections of the population and we take into consideration all the investments that will come to the state, this gap will increase. So we estimate that by 2026, the gap will be 500,000 jobs that might not be fulfilled because the employers might not be able to find that talent. And most of these jobs will be in STEM, digital, engineering, and other positions that we will see later. If we go to, actually I have here, yeah. If we see this, how they are the population trends in the state, we see a negative trend. We see that the population is declining. As Chancellor mentioned, we see a net positive migration for the state, but even considering the migration, what the US Census and the Bureau of Labor Statistics project is that we will see a decline in the total number of population in the state over the next few years. So when we compare 2030 to 2010, we see a decline of 4%, 4 or 5% in total of the population in the state. We will increase the need to train and to make sure that the population that we have are ready to take the jobs that we'll be creating. And there is also a challenge about higher education. When we compare the total attainment rate in the state, the total people that graduate from higher education, we see that we are below some peers, particularly in some minority groups, like Black and Hispanic population. And there is also an opportunity in some counties, like Adams, Pike, Marion, Noble, Holmes, and others, where the attainment rates are below 20-25%, which is less than what is required to complete the talent gap that we were talking about before. If we take a closer look our education pipeline. So it is true what the Chancellor is mentioning, we are really good at attracting talent, but we have an opportunity to make sure that Ohioans, so people who study in Ohio, stay in Ohio. If we see the numbers around 2021, 56% of the students that completed or graduated in the state stay. the other 44% left the state and moved to other places. That's below other states or peer states like Texas, California, North Carolina. So we have an opportunity to retain the people that we educate here. And we are really good top performers in some graduate programs like advanced manufacturing and healthcare, but we have the opportunity to improve in some other areas like information technology and computer science, which by the way is also the position where we have the biggest gap, like comparing software development and digital related jobs. So let's take a closer look at where the problem might be or what can we do to increase the pipeline and the number of people that graduate from universities. If we take a look at high schools, let's take a look at the class of 2014 high schools. We see that only 31% of the people that completed high school completed a bachelor degree 6 years later. 18% didn't graduate on time, 30% started a program but didn't complete it, and 21% is still in progress of completing the program. So 31%, like less than a third of high school students, completed a bachelor degree. So we have an opportunity to make sure that high school graduates either complete a graduate program or complete a certification program or another training program to meet the demands that we will see in the labor market. And if we even take a step back and see how can we help our children and the future generation to be ready, we see also an opportunity to improve education outcomes. We see that many students score below proficiency in English language and in elementary and middle school. So what we can see is more than 40% of students are below proficiency for fourth grade and eighth grade in English proficiency. And the gap is even bigger when we take a closer look at Hispanic and Black population, when the scores are even lower, and also for economically disadvantaged people. So let's summarize the picture right now where we are. So what we are seeing is a big gap in the market, 300,000 jobs that were available but were not completed. This number might increase to 500,000. Most of these jobs are in STEM jobs, like digital technologies, administrative jobs, especially financial services and accounting, and education is where we see the biggest gaps. And then we believe that the gap will increase because we see the declines in population trends over the next few years. And we also see the challenge of keeping students that study in Ohio. We see an opportunity to create programs for them to stay. Also opportunities to improve the pipeline or the number of students that finish high school and go to graduate education. And also opportunities to improve elementary school or basic education. This is where we are. And now let's see what's coming for the future. Because we know that we have challenges now, but we also have opportunities in the near future. So we know that Intel, for example, will invest $20 billion in the state. We will create even more jobs and we'll create even more opportunities. But we also see other trends that we should be aware, and those trends might disrupt the labor market in Ohio. So there are three trends that we want to talk about right now. The first trend is automation. The second is changes in consumer demand due to COVID. And the third one is remote work. So let's start with automation. So what we did at McKinsey, we did a global study about what's the percentage of jobs that could be automated. Automated meaning that they have some repetitive activities that could be done by machines or by digital technologies. So for example, some jobs that could be fully replaced could be sewing machines or some assembly line workers, because those jobs can be done by machines. There are some other activities that could not be fully replaced, like bus drivers. They cannot be fully replaced yet because it requires some judgment when driving. There are some portions of the activities that could be replaced, but not fully. And then there are some other activities that cannot be replaced right now because they are not technology to replace, like doctors, psychiatrists, legislators, chief executives, because those managerial roles require a lot of human interaction, a lot of judgment, a lot of critical thinking that the machines cannot replace. The human size or the human approach of those jobs cannot be replaced, okay? So then what we did is, okay, so we understand all the jobs that could be replaced with current technologies. Let's see how many people in Ohio will be affected if we could replace their jobs with machines and with digital technologies. And this is what we found. So we have a total labor force of 5.9 million people in Ohio. Most of the people working in retail, manufacturing, administrative support, healthcare. So what we found is, let's take the example for retail. We have 579,000 people working in retail. We estimate like something between 27% and 40% of those jobs could be replaced by machines or by digital technologies, which represents something like 231,000 people. And we see in that transition many retail stores closing because now they are opening online stores, so they require less people. I'm sure many of you have gone to McDonald's and now can order a burger just using the machine, so they have less cashiers. So we are seeing that transition. And we believe that in the next 8 years, 200,000 people could be replaced for this. So think about the implications for that. If we go occupation by occupation by occupation, which is what we did, we believe that between 24% and 29% of the people right now working in Ohio could be replaced by machines in the next 10 years. It's something between 1.4 and 1.7 million people. So what we believe is we travel in time and we go to the year 2030, something like 1.4 and 1.7 people will be working in activities different from the activities that they are doing right now. So that represents a massive opportunity for us, for these people, for the state, to retrain those people, to reskill those people, and help them transition to other jobs that will be demanded. So remember at the beginning we were saying, like, we are having many jobs are coming, engineering, digital technologies. So part of the labor force that we will need to meet those demands will come from people that will be displaced from these other activities. So we need to find a way. How do we help the cashier? How do we help the administrative person that might lose his job in the next few years to be retrained, upskilled, reskilled, and take some of the jobs that will come in the future? Okay? And if we take a closer look at the occupations, we analyze occupation by occupation. We believe that the specific occupations that will be more affected in Ohio are retail salesperson, stockers, order fillers, office clerks, cashiers, fast food workers, customer service representatives, waiters, waitresses, secretaries, and others. For example, for retail people, just using the current information from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and our projections, we estimate like 65,000 people might be displaced because of automation, which is more or less like 42% of the people working in this area right now. I don't have like in this page, but we take a look at where they are and the racial composition. Most of these people are from Hispanic background, African-American background, and living in low-income populations. So we will need to have a proactive approach to reach vulnerable populations, train and upskill populations, and making sure that they take some of the jobs that will be created in the future. So now let's think about where the jobs will be created. So we know where the jobs might be lost. Now where the jobs will be created. As we hear earlier today, we see a lot of jobs being created in STEM, in digital technologies, engineers, manufacturing workers, and all the jobs that will come in the semiconductor industry. We also see a lot of jobs in health professionals, health technicians. After the pandemic, the demand for healthcare services increased drastically, and we expect that that trend will continue. Also, managers and many other direct and indirect jobs that will be created from the different industries that will move to Ohio. So it's an opportunity to help all the people that we see at the bottom of this graph, food services, production work, customer service, office support, find a way to train them, upskill this labor force, and move them to some of the jobs that will be created in the future here in Ohio. Plus, like making sure that we educate others because still the gap might exist. Remember, like, this is just about relocation of labor force, but still we see a gap of 500,000 people that we will need to complete. So we see two problems here. We need people, just people, to complete the 500,000 jobs that might not be fulfilled in the next few years, and then an opportunity of reskilling. So all the people that might lose jobs because of automation and other digital trends might also need some support to transition to some of the jobs that will be created. And these technological trends also open some opportunities. And one opportunity that we see at McKinsey is remote work. So we have surveyed many executives across the country, and we see that 72% of the executives in the country say that they have adopted some work of remote work or hybrid work, and they expect to continue with those trends. So we took a closer look at Ohio, where the jobs will be created. And projections from McKinsey and also from the US survey estimate that most of the jobs will be concentrated in a few places, like Columbus, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Dayton. But most of the counties in the state will see flat growth, or even in some places negative growth. And remote work might be an opportunity to start creating jobs in those locations. So many administrative jobs, many activities that, for example, accounting, financial service, and others that will not fully be replaced by machines, could be performed remotely and could be performed in those locations where currently we don't see a lot of job growth. So we are seeing different states taking that kind of approach, like creating training centers, creating workforce development training programs outside the cities or in locations where they can reach rural populations or they can reach underserved populations and meet them where they are, train them for the skills, and then leverage the opportunities for remote work to complete or to fulfill some of the jobs that are not being completed right now. Now let's think about the skills. So what are the type of skills that our people will need in the future? So we see that we will need less physical skills, basic cognitive skills. We will need more higher cognitive skills, more specific engineering, higher education, also some of the jobs that are required for manufacturing and production in the state, a lot more social and emotional skills. And we believe that technological skills will be part of the basic portfolio of skills of the worker in 10 years. So we see that in 10 years, everyone should have some sort of software development understanding, at least how that works, some understanding of product management, big data, agile methodologies. So it will become part of the language of the worker. Many of the companies that are moving here will require some understanding of those technologies, and we need to start educating for those technologies, how to be aware of digital technologies. And more important, some skills will become even more and more relevant, which we call social emotional skills, like creativity, critical thinking, social intelligence, communication, self-direction, resilience. These type of skills that, by the way, cannot be replaced by machines. Those are the most resilient skills, because even if we think about like 30, 40, 50 years, those are the skills that machines or digital technologies cannot replace, like a human judgment. So we need to start training our students to have a perspective about the different aspects of the different jobs, job tasks, to start thinking about how to work in teams, to start thinking about how to solve complex problems, and to think less about repetitive activities that will eventually will be replaced at some point by machines or by computers or by digital technologies, and start thinking about the solutions that they can actually unlock for society, for other groups. So the education system is moving in some places, or should be moving in that direction. And just to close, I'm moving before the panel, what will be required for all these big challenges? So we see a lot of opportunities of jobs coming to the state, but we need to find a way to attract more talent, to reskill some people, to help people transition from one job to the other. So that will be like a massive task that will require collaboration from everyone in this group, but also from many policymakers and for different stakeholders in the state. We will need the participation of credential system, credential programs, offering training programs for high school students, and making sure that we develop the specific skills that the market will need. Also, improvements in K-12 education and colleges to make sure that we train also for the specific needs that we'll need in the market. But we need even more. We cannot just give the total responsibility to education institutions. We also need employer collaboration. We are seeing in many other states employers working together, offering training systems, apprenticeship systems, and making pledges and commitments to hire people in the communities. A lot of talent matching companies, so the government helping employers match with opportunities. We see more and more governments being more active, offering wraparound and support services, like helping people re-enter the labor market, like offering childcare services to women so they can enter the labor market. That's the main unlock for gender participation in many states. Or offering transportation, or offering other wraparound services that help people enter the labor market. And also some policy shaping to create more incentives for people to stay. We are seeing some states, for example, offering tax rebates or debt forgiveness programs for the students to create incentives for them to stay within the state where they study. So there is no one magic bullet that will solve the problem. It's a big problem. It will require the coordinated participation for many of these elements. So I'm going to pause there, and I will have the panel to answer some questions. But hopefully this was helpful to get some idea of the challenges that are coming.
You want to take a seat?
Sure.
Wow. Thank you, Rafael. That was terrific. And, you know, it kind of brings me back to when I was a kid growing up and my goal in life, and I failed, was to play baseball for the Cincinnati Reds. So I'm still trying to figure out how to succeed in life. But in all seriousness, you know, my heart goes out those statistics to kids who fall through the cracks. First in my family to graduate from high school, and that high school experience was critical for me to succeed, getting that degree, but learning, great teachers. And I'm a graduate of the Columbus Public Schools, and too many of those kids today aren't getting out with a degree and aren't learning. So those statistics and that information, Rafael, are so good to get the next panel kicked off. We have a great one to help us discuss and expose and engage students to career opportunities and pathways at a younger age. We want to have all Ohioans be aware of the many opportunities that they have today in our state and be prepared for these great jobs. Additionally, we want to ensure that in doing this, that we can intentionally pursue strategies to engage our historically underserved and marginalized populations all our communities and families to thrive. We must engage all Ohioans. So joining me this morning, in addition to Rafael, come on up when I introduce you, Michael Collins, Vice President of Jobs for the Future. Michael, give him a round of applause as he comes up. And Lizette Gonzalez Reynolds, Vice President of Policy at Exceline Ed, a national organization that supports state leaders in transforming education. Lizette. And you already met Rafael with McKinsey & Company. So thank you three for joining us today. I'm going to sit down and ask these experts some questions. Thank you three for being here today and joining us here at this conference. Lizette, Exceline Ed has its finger on the pulse of this work, not just in the Midwest, but across America. Obviously a big challenge, a big country, challenging regions. Can you share some of the innovative work that you're seeing in other states around America in this particular area? And specifically, what are they doing in the K-12 and post-secondary space? Hey, what can we learn?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Am I on? Can you hear me? Okay. Honestly, the biggest takeaway, and I think, Rafael, you alluded to this towards the end of your speech, is that we need to stop developing programs and policies in silos. Right now, the Governor's Office of Workforce Transformation is actually doing that. That is where the work is getting aligned, and where we can all come together to bring the business community together with K-12 and with higher education to really ensure the coordination and alignment of jobs and skills so that the state of Ohio can be successful. But part of it in the work that we're doing with Pathways Matters, that we're asking states to really take a step back and look holistically across their agencies to understand where the barriers are, where's the policy that's working, and where is it not working? And how do we get to be better consumers of the business community so that we can serve them in a way that the workforce is best educated? So recently, one of our biggest key policy levers is what we call a return on investment analysis, which is basically an audit of CTE programming. Mississippi just recently adopted a legislation that would allow a comprehensive audit just to do that. And so the questions they're going to be asking are, what does our business and industry need? What are the skills they need? Where do students end up? after they take CTE courses, and who has access to what. One of the conversations I had a couple of weeks back with Michael Petrelli was about how, you know, that there was this issue around tracking. But the thing is what we don't what we're not giving enough credit to ensure is that there's an and here. We should also have the so-called kids on the college track also taking CTE courses, because there is a tremendous opportunity for everybody to benefit from the opportunities that are provided by many of the CTE courses. But the issue, though, is what are those courses that are being offered, and are they actually leading to meaningful pathways? And so one of the things that we found out is right now in the country, only 18% of credentials that are awarded are actually aligned with the most demand jobs in this country. In Ohio, it's 21%. So while it's good to advocate for stronger credential attainment and stronger apprenticeships and those sorts of things, we need to make sure that they're meaningful and that they're actually going to lead into jobs that are most in demand, not only in the state but across the country. One of the other really key programs is in Indiana, what they call the Next Level Jobs Initiative. They have this really great program called the Employer Training Grant. And so they award, the state awards the employers up to $5,000 per employee that they recruit, train, and retain if they for up to 6 months, up to $50,000 a year. So that is a great incentive for employers to get in the game and really provide support to not only the K-12 systems, but also the higher ed systems, so that they're preparing kids for the best jobs. And I think that's it for now. So
that was a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was really great. Michael, please share with us the work you're doing at Jobs for the Future and JFF's commitment to your initiative called Purpose Built Call to Action for Achieving Black Economic Equality. What is the commitment and what does the work entail for you all?
Thank you, Pat, and thank you, Lisa. It's a privilege to be here. So for those of you who don't know JFF, we're a national nonprofit. We work to transform our nation's education and training system. We do design work, we do scale work, influence work, and we invest. So our design work, we actually create new initiatives. We helped kind of roll out and design the Early College High School Initiative with support from the Gates Foundation. Through our scale work, we work in networks. Lisa and others in the room have been a part of JFF's Post-Secondary State Policy Network, where we do scale work. We do influence work through our policy work and federal advocacy, and we also have an investment arm, the Education Technology Fund, where we invest in mission-aligned startups. And I gave you that context. We've been around for 40-plus years. I gave you that context for what we do because we, in many ways, are at the kind of we're a connection point in the education to work kind of ecosystem. And the commitment that Pat talked about really was about our mission. So our mission is economic advancement for all. And when we looked at what was happening in the country during 2020 with the kind of national, actually global demonstrations around George Floyd's killing and the outbreak of the pandemic, when we looked at what was happening in the labor market, that unemployment rate, that historically low unemployment rate that was about 5.8% for Black Americans in February exploded to close to 17% in April. And what we saw was that low unemployment rate actually masked the fact that a lot of that work, Black workers were overrepresented in many of the jobs that were lower wage work. They were in harm's way of the pandemic. They were working kind of frontline work. And we said to ourselves, we've been at this, at the center of the education to work ecosystem for 40 plus years. Why do these outcomes look like this? We have cared about equity, we've cared about inclusion. So the commitment was to redouble our effort to examine the specific and unique challenges that Black learners and workers face in our education and training system and also in our labor market. And so the purpose-built kind of call to action for Black economic equity really is our attempt to look really deeply at our own work and really push ourselves to ensure that all of our strategies across our high school to college transition work, across our post-secondary work, across our workforce work, right, to ensure that that work was robust enough to address the unique challenges that Black learners and workers face in our labor market. I've got a session later on, I can talk more about it, but Pat, I'll turn it back over to you for now and can share more later.
Thank you, appreciate that. Rafael, your presentation was terrific. You had a map up on the screen that showed economic growth in some of our regions that are anchored by larger cities and suburbs. Chancellor Gardner and I were talking before the conference started about how we have two Ohios. We have urban, suburban, and we have rural. Mm-hmm. And in those rural areas, and there are folks here from rural Ohio, over the last 10 years, we saw population loss, oftentimes because of lack of opportunity for jobs. So I was intrigued that in your presentation, you mentioned more opportunities for Ohioans to see jobs created in those regions that have historically not had those jobs. Can you provide some examples here for our state in the context of that slide and those opportunities?
Sure. That's a challenge that we see, you know, so many other states in the U.S. like trying to provide job opportunities in rural areas, so outside the main cities. So it's still in early stages on early thinking, but what we're seeing in other states is trying to provide some specific training programs, more specific to digital technologies, software development, and other IT-related jobs in remote areas. So being proactive in reaching out to populations living in those sectors, like trying to identify young people, kids, high school students, on people who would like to have a job in one of these positions, and offer some online courses or training or certifications that they can take online, and then trying to find to match them to some of the opportunities, especially with software development, IT development, or other jobs that are not fulfilled. So we have seen examples like this one in other United States. California is doing something similar in some counties, Texas as well. So it requires collaboration between the training provider and the employer. But in specific places like California, Orange County, what they are doing is they identify some gap in software development and IT jobs, and they want to give some of these jobs to some students that usually live in remote areas. So they develop a certification program with Google, another one with Amazon Web Services. Like, how do we train these programs to students that live farther from the cities? We deliver the program to them, and then we find a way to connect it with some of the employers so they can still be working remotely and meet the demand for these jobs that currently we are not supplying enough talent. So it's still in progress, still thinking about how this will work, how this will execute. But we see this need from many other states. So how do we make sure that the benefits go beyond just the cities? And how do we leverage some of these remote technologies that we are using more and more? So 2 or 3 years ago, I personally would have never imagined I would be working on Zoom like most of my day, but now it's happening. So all this is opening many opportunities. How do we leverage these remote opportunities to create this? And it doesn't mean that everything will be remote or digital. I mean, we still see the value of going to the office, and many companies are still pushing for going to office once in a while, but if most of the time the person will be away or far from the city, how do we train these people and making sure that they also participate in the labor market? So to answer, it's still development, but I think the trend is moving in that direction.
Great. So you highlighted some of the critical skills employers are seeking, which tracks with what I'm hearing from our members. Technical skills seem to be an easier area to screen for. How are employers, however, from the research that you've done, evaluating or screening for social and emotional adaptability in areas like what types of preparation or experience are they seeking?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we see also many employers valuing more the critical skills and the emotional skills and trying to develop but also evaluate many of these projects. But we see also in the IT sector, which is like leading edge on this area, many of the certification programs and training programs from, again, Amazon, Google, they are project-based. So they are teaching students with specific projects. Like, the student has 3 or 4 months to work in a team to develop a particular outcome, like a website or a software solution or something for a company. just working on project-based learning programs, help them learn many skills that they cannot learn in the classroom, like working in teams, thinking critically, pivot the solutions from one to the other if something is not working. And they have a coach, and this coach is providing some feedback on these soft skills that become more and more relevant. Because at the end of the day, the machines and the technologies and all of that can supply most of the work that used to be done by programmers before. Now what we need is like someone who can manage and navigate the different stakeholders, the different policies, understand the consumer, and they need more like project-based approach and someone coaching them in that soft skill. So we are seeing that in IT, we're also seeing that more in healthcare, more in consulting and financial services, like putting the students from the beginning to real situations and having more one-on-one coaching opportunities. And the on-the-job training apprenticeship is becoming more and more important to develop these skills. So this is still, similar to my previous answer, it's still something that employees are trying to figure out, where the trend is moving to more on-the-job training, learning, and evaluation of these skills.
Thank you. Michael, as you know, we continue to struggle as a country and a state to effectively engage our citizens, all of our citizens, in career pathways. What strategies, messages, engagement have the greatest impact for what populations of learners, and how should our state be tailoring efforts to reach them?
That's a great question, Pat. And I mean, one of the things I was thinking about as Chancellor Gardner was talking, there are so many different types of, you know, kind of pathways. There are different types of degrees. The skilling agenda is really strong. And one of JFF's strategic priorities really kind of is around kind of career navigation. How do we help people understand the full range of their post-secondary options? So what we're finding is that, you know, higher education, some workforce development can be really a powerful, powerful to move people with regard to economic advancement. But what we're seeing in the data is that many times when Black learners, Latinx learners are in post-secondary or in workforce, they are overrepresented in programs that are not associated with economic value, right? So how do you help get more information? How do you help people understand? How do you help people prepare for jobs that are aligned with labor market opportunity? And so in this time with the proliferation, I want to say that the number of credentials, discrete credentials, actually is close to 1 million. It may have eclipsed 1 million different types of credentials. Like, how do we help Ohioans understand which pathways make the most sense for them? There are implications for region. We talked about urban and rural. There are real challenges that we face in ensuring that people can make smart decisions about their post-secondary options. So Rafael put up on the screen, opportunities in digital, in IT, and in healthcare. Those are precisely the fields where we see underrepresentation of Black and brown people. And so how do we raise awareness about the opportunity of those types of credentials and those fields? And how do we encourage people to pursue those pathways, I think is really important. The other thing I would say around opportunities for Ohio, there's a lot of confusion right now around, and a lot of debate around the impact of post-secondary. And I think it's an unfortunate debate because the data are really clear that kind of post-secondary attainment can be really, really powerful. So how do we help people understand that investments in post-secondary education really matter and they can make a difference, but to add the information about the reality that all credentials are not created equal. We do have to help people understand which credentials are going to have currency in the labor market, in local and regional labor markets. And now, as you mentioned with the remote work, right, how do we help people understand what might be available to them that may not be in their region? So those are some of the things that JFF is thinking about, and I think that they have implications for Ohio and some of the data that Rafael put up.
Well said.
And if I could add too, I mean, part of it too, Rafael, which again, I think every time we see those academic numbers come up, I mean, we also have a serious issue in achieving proficiency in reading and math in this state. And so we've got, in order to, for them to be able to achieve in a post-secondary space, whether it's a two-year, four-year, or even an apprenticeship or paid internship, our students have to have the knowledge and skills to be able to write and to be able to communicate in their jobs. And I think sometimes we get at this either or, and this, again, as I had mentioned, this tracking kind of mentality, that there's the college bound and there's the career bound. And it should be fluid. There should be some opportunities on both sides so that all kids are ready to be able to enter into a post-secondary pathway, even in a career, well-read and well-prepared to be successful for that employer.
Can I follow up?
Oh, absolutely. This is great.
Can I follow up with that?
Yes.
Just really quickly, to the point that Lizette was making, we saw on the screen pretty significant gaps, you know, kind of ELA, kind of early on, these gaps absolutely mitigate who has access to what program of study later on, right? And so really trying to get out in front of issues of proficiency around ELA, math preparation. The math preparation in post-secondary, it's critical, right? You're going to cut off the STEM pathways that Raphael showed us, you know, kind of our growing opportunities. Those are gonna be cut off, you know, if you're not entering within striking distance of being prepared for kind of quantitatively oriented and STEM oriented pathways. So I think that the point around kind of the early engagement to address some of the gaps, and they were pretty significant gaps early on, I think is absolutely critical to having the workforce that we need down the line. So yeah. great point.
Really great point, and you reminded me to give a shout out to Lisa Gray, who's in the Akron Beacon Journal today, on this very topic, and it's critically important for our legislators and all of us to recognize this really important issue. So thank you for bringing that up. Last but not least, Lizette, given your knowledge, quite frankly, of our state, which we're really pleased to have you here to talk about it, what are the one or two specific policy actions that can be lifted in our state to accelerate this work that we're talking about?
Well, I'll talk about the most hardest one. and it's gonna be engaging the Governor's Office of Workforce Transformation is really to do a return on investment analysis of the course offerings in your CTE programming. Which credentials are being offered? Are kids actually using those later on in life? Or is it translating to mid to high level wages and jobs? That's really tough because there are many constituencies around these programs, and I want to say when we did Pathways Matter 2 years ago, like the number one certification in Ohio that kids were attaining was OSHA, and that's just a start. There are so many robust career technical education opportunities that all our kids could take advantage of. I know I wish I had, you know, I wish that I could have also built up those kinds of skills and that my kids would too. But I would think that is the first priority, and it's gonna require the muscle in this room to make it happen, because it is a very, very tough job, particularly when you see the return on investment of some programs that kids really love, like cosmetology, but if you look at the lifetime earnings, you're talking $30,000 a year. That's not a livable wage. And then I would say also outcomes-based funding in technical and community colleges. Like, where are the kids going? Where are these students going? What jobs are they getting? And building some performance incentives around that to reward those two-year programs for actually getting students into high demand mid to high wage skilled jobs. And then I would say, I want to take advantage of what Commissioner Gardner had mentioned about I can't remember the name of the program he called it, basically helping students kind of, I think it was employees kind of obtain that last credential. We would also encourage, you know, like building momentum on the Ohio College Opportunity Grant, Choose Ohio First program, to really think about last mile, last dollar scholarships. So that kids that are students, I say kids, I'm so old, I'm just, you know, sorry. Everybody's a kid under the age of 40 to me. But for students to actually be able to like complete that last year towards that certification or that credential, but maybe they're running out of money, or maybe they're running out of time or opportunity. So there's a real tremendous opportunity to build upon that. It sounds like Ohio's very engaged in that sort of initiatives, but there's so much more that could be done.
Wow, we've run out of time, unfortunately, and if I don't wrap this up, Lisa's gonna fire me. So we really appreciate your engagement today and the work that you three are doing. I hope you'll come back if we ask you to come back in the future, because you've added a lot to the debate today, and we appreciate all you do. Give the three a round of applause.
Thank you.